Hi, this is Stuttering John Melendez from the Howard Stern Show. And for some really stupid reason, you're listening to the
Insufferable Bastards.
Great name for a podcast, morons.
Thanks, John.
Perfectly fine.
Insufferable Bastards.
Those of you that are into podcasts like to listen to that kind of stuff.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Insufferable Bastards, formerly known as the Mobile Horror Companion. My name is Carlos Danger, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Brian Spears. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
So as we record this, it is May 16th, man, and we didn't really plan this one out whatsoever. We sort of skipped a week, but sort of didn't skip a week last week. We did do, you guys were on for my day job, Brian, you came on, and Matt Maisto yep. from Mondo Creepy, and Mike Lane from Music, Movies, and More podcast came on my live stream I was doing for my nonprofit, my online newspaper. And so I did post that on our Facebook page, and nobody watched it, but I didn't really promote it. But I didn't get a chance to put that charity appearance into iTunes and Libsyn and all that because I had problems. I had problems with the audio. But so we're back. All right. After all that, nobody gives a shit. We are back. This is audio only, though. I didn't feel like posting the video. Although, who knows? Maybe after this is done, maybe we'll just. Well, no. Not going to post it.
We also were a guest on the Planet of the Comics.
That's
their movie
that's
invitational.
Right. That's right. Yep. Yep.
So if we missed an episode,
I love Judge Dredd. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
Sorry, I just had to do that real fast. Yeah,
Johnny Amenta. If we missed an episode, we were moonlighting on another site.
Now, did you be honest? Did you listen to our appearance on?
Not in one sitting, but I did.
Did?
I,
okay.
Oh yeah, no, I really did. Because I was driving home one night and it came up, so I just said, "Oh, well, all right, I guess I'll." Listen to the first hour, you know, and I was like, kind of, yeah, I don't even listen to our podcast, but I don't know. I thought this one would be, I also wanted to see if how much was edited and, you know, see how they do their thing. Cause we kind of just go, you know, straight in and
right,
just kind of put it out there. I like that movie.
Way of the Gun. So we were on Pint of Comics for the Pint Movie Invitational. After about 20 years of asking to be on, they finally had us on their actual podcast. And we talked about, Way of the Gun. Yeah, I thought, hey, was what struck me and made me chuckle was like, we go back and forth with Johnny Ganache, or he's always like, you guys are, I'm glad I'm not paying for your podcast. It's only like 20 minutes sometimes. And I'm like, well, your podcast is longer than the movies. And then we appear, and that podcast, at 2 hours and 2 minutes, was like 5 minutes longer than Way of the Gun.
Well, I think too, the way we are, like they really break down a movie. Like
Right.
So that right there takes forever. And then there's tangents. But I mean, I think when we talk about a movie here, even when it's like a brand new movie, we probably like aren't as descriptive as some podcasts are. We're like, either you know what we're talking about or you don't.
Yeah, we usually go in, and that's been our stated objective from the beginning. It was actually like a source of conflict when our co-founder would come on. He'd want to go through the plot, and me and you would be like, no, let's just assume people saw the
movie. We did a movie like the top 100 movies. It was a Joe birthday gift or Christmas gift to himself.
Oh, yeah.
And we literally like listed every movie with every plot. And that just, I don't know, like, again, if I love the movie Dead Heat. If I have to explain the plot to you, then you probably shouldn't be listening to this.
Right. Yeah. But this particular thing, like the Pint does, which I kind of like, and I took it as a challenge because they kind of break down, you know, you're trying.
They do it like a school outline.
You're trying to deconstruct these movies. Right. And so I did appreciate that. And I did probably, and I felt bad for Johnny Amenta because I did as much research on that freaking Way of the Gun as I've done with anything. You know, I spent hours listening to the commentaries, and I think I've read every single article that's ever been written about Way of the Gun and Chris McQuarrie interviews and all that. So, yeah, I thought it was good. It's maybe people should listen. Go ahead and listen.
Oh, I think it's a great podcast. And I'm not knocking it. I just remember. Well,
it's definitely the best podcast that Pint of Comics has ever published. Oh, I'll just say that right now.
That's for sure.
I mean, like, what other podcast? How many? Like, we've got Jackie the Joke Man Martling is mentioned in the podcast, right? Because there's a scene in Way of the Gun where you see a porno mag and it's got Jackie's name on the front cover. So I put on Twitter, hey, Jackie retweets it, messages us, asks for my email. I give him your email, by the way. And he was like, oh, that fan. Jackie's first like, oh, yeah, it was that was a real penthouse. And then I went back and I watched it. And he was like, well, maybe it wasn't penthouse. Maybe it was something else. But he was like, no, it was genuine because I thought it was fake. And it was something called Perfect 10.
Perfect 10. All right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I messaged that to Jackie because I took a picture of my TV with the scene. And then he, yeah, it was some whatever guy from back in the day. So we had Jackie. Because
he was the joke guy. He was the joke page. Perfect 10 joke page.
Wait a second. You're familiar with the porno mag we're talking about?
Yeah, because the guy, Neil Zuderman or Neil, I don't know who, I don't know the guy's name. The guy that ran it would always be on Howard.
Oh, no kidding. So they just know that.
Or like Jackie did it so they got free advertisement because he would always, like he, I think he was Jackie Penthouse joke
Norm,
page.
Here's Jackie's messages.
Norm Burrington or?
Norm Zeta?
Zeta. Yeah.
Oh, that's so wild.
So Norm Zeta, and he would bring the models on for like, you know, parties and things like that. They always had interviewed the, you know, the centerfolds. It's basically they got a free plug, I think, because Jackie did the jokes for, you know, the centerfold section. He left, got fired from Penthouse or left, and then like Perfect 10. Yeah, man, I know this whole, yeah, I know.
And that is so amazing because he didn't even go into any of that.
Yeah.
So that is so awesome. Yeah, so we had that, right? So that guy, come on, Pint of Comics. You got Jackie the Joke Man talking well, about again, your.
I think it's worthwhile just listening to it because it's like a week of Pint without Larry.
Finally, an episode without Larry, some kind of wonderful Dwyer. And actually, we got to talk about Larry Dwyer's Connecticut Cult Classics. Because they got something coming up. They just did they screened Alien, I believe, last night in the city of Ansonia up in Connecticut's lower Naugatuck Valley, right outside sort of Bridgeport, New Haven area. Yeah, so that's going on. But the other thing with that, and hopefully I can bring this up with that Pint of Comics Way of the Gun episode, you put it on your personal page, and you're where we get our views from. Like when you put something on Facebook, like the last episode, the charity one, I mean, it was on my work page and it got plenty of views. You know, hundreds of people saw that one. I haven't checked it. Maybe it's even thousands. I don't know. But I mean, we did it at 11 o'clock at night and you can't really expect a local news audience to be that big on, oh yeah, Mondo Creepy's on or, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah they don't.
We're three nobodies on your show.
Well, not even nobody, but you know, it's not, but that's not that the audience.
Anyway. Yeah.
It's not the audience. So I'm not trying to insult, but you know. This podcast audience isn't the same as the Valley Indie audience, my nonprofit online newspaper. But anyway, you put it on your personal page and freaking Rob, wait, was it Kurtzman?
Kurtzman, Bob Kurtzman, yeah.
Like,
I guess he was the makeup artist in it.
I know, and I'm so like, we love you, we pointed out how great the makeup was.
Yeah.
We probably did.
And I didn't know that. Listen, I know Bob. I just worked with him in Massachusetts, you know. We did a COVID movie together safely, of course. But yeah, like I did a Glass Eye movie with him years ago. Yeah, like it's funny because I just didn't even assume, like he's done so many movies. He's done that to me where we just talk about movies sitting there. And he's like, oh, you know, I did that movie. You know, we're doing some work for him. So. We're doing some work for him. And we had a question about like a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And he happened to call the shop. And that's what we asked him. You know what I mean? Like, hey, who did the makeup during this scene?
Oh, so I wonder if in Way of the Gun, he did that incredible Ryan.
I kind of said, like, I baited him to answer a little bit more.
Oh, like, I think, okay.
Yeah, I kind of responded and, you know, said, hey, they mentioned a makeup artist on the disc. Like, I was hoping he'd be like, you know, but I'm sure he's a busy man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, maybe, and he's an old school guy, right? I mean, he's got a couple of years on us. So he's not gonna be bragging about his. He doesn't strike me as that. I don't know anything about the guy.
I remember working with him, and I'd be asking him stuff. He's like, guys, I have no clue. I have no clue. He's like, that was so long ago. Like, you know,
right? Because well, like, I mean, like the perspective. Like,
listen,
is like,
he did Evil Dead too, and I always tell him like that is the great. And he will admit like, oh, that's a great. a great movie, you know, like he's like, because it just keeps, it moves, it never stops.
Yeah.
And I'll remember, like, we would just sitting there, and out of the blue, he'd be like, oh, I remember this. So like, you would ask him things, and 2 weeks later, he'd come up with a story.
That's so,
you know,
funny.
What I mean? Like, it was very,
it's his job.
Fun.
It's his job, right? Yeah. Like, I just remember,
and he's
like,
done thousands of movies. I mean, right. You know, you could argue that he's responsible. Like, he gave Tarantino money to write a script, you know, and then they did Reservoir Dogs. So, you know, he has a very storied history, a very, you know, and he's a really nice guy. And yeah, hey, and I think it's even cooler. The next time I see him or talk to him, I would love to talk about Way of the Gun.
Right. You know, he didn't listen to this, but he did. He did. Yeah. He saw it. He read it. He was like, hey, I work. That was awesome. And yeah, just what I was trying to get out there is just like, as a kid, you know, we're probably like a decade behind him, right? I assume we're like 10 years younger than him. Like, just so we were like 15 and he's probably in his 20s and, you know, reading him in Fangoria. Like, he was, you know, KMB were rock stars, especially to you growing up. So that's.
Yeah, like big time.
Yeah, so I wasn't gonna put anything snarky under that. I saw him on the face. I'm like, I'm stunned. I don't want to somehow tick him off or something like that. So anyway, that was our Pint of Comics Way of the Gun episode. Check out Pint of Comics for all sorts of. I mean, just check them out for our episode. Oh, and now the family has returned to the homestead. My family was out at a carnival, and they've returned because of the rain. I did not tell them I was recording a podcast, so this could get ugly. You could hear some screaming in the background. And I needed to put their daughter's laundry in the dryer, and I forgot. All right, so did you want to talk real fast about this thing I posted on Facebook, or do you want to go through, like, all right, so let's see. What did I just do with it? Oh, wait. So we talked about Scary Larry Dwyer, a lover of the movie Some Kind of Wonderful. He has coming up June 19th. At the Strand Theater in Seymour, Connecticut, David Cronenberg night. They're going to be playing The Fly and Scanners in a double feature. I don't know.
In the perfect order.
Right. Yeah. See The Fly and then walk out for Scanners, you're saying?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I support this. I think this is a really cool billing.
Right. Yeah. So, like, if you want tickets, I guess there's still some tickets left because he doesn't have sold out. As we're recording this on May 16th, go to ConnecticutCultClassics.com. And I would also reference you to go to the Insufferable Bastard podcast, either wherever you find that. And back in March, that was the last episode we recorded. Before all the pandemic stuff. That was the day COVID arrived, basically, in Connecticut. It arrived in Bryanstown in New York.
And then, Danbury, right, Connecticut.
Maine. Yeah. 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 I'm getting a little double feedback. I wonder if I must be coming through your headphone somehow. Or maybe it's my headphone. But anyway, yeah. So go check that out as well. No dogs allowed at the. Okay, good. I didn't tell her to bring a dog. So yeah, that's Larry Dwyer coming up. Good for them. Yeah, The Fly definitely stands the test of time. I watched that in preparation for that episode. So okay, so there was this post. I follow Paul Schrader.
Oh, me too now.
On Facebook, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
for a short time when he first joined, I was actually friends with him, but he booted me off because he was like, booted everybody he doesn't really know. And he was just, you know, he'd be high on like Ambient or whatever those sleeping. I don't know. He would be posting, and the next day he was like, oh, sorry, I took too many Ambience or whatever the hell it is. But he had a great post the other day about underrated crime films. And I just went to the wrong page here. I need the Insufferable Podcast. You can find us on Facebook on the Insufferable Podcast where I shared this. Okay. It's the most underrated crime films of the decade. And maybe since I'm doing this on Zoom, Brian, you can even. So maybe we'll quickly go through some of these because me and Brian are huge crime film fans. So, and this is one of those lists. Usually you read, right? The first movie is Standoff at Sparrow Creek, a movie Brian has brought up probably 1,000 times on past episodes of this podcast as an underrated film you should seek out. And it's by the same guys who brought you Dragged Across Concrete,
yeah,
Brawl in Cell Block. What the hell was that movie? Cell Block 44, Cell Block
99 or 90.
I can't remember. Bone Tomahawk. But an earlier one, and it's probably their least known, was Standoff at Sparrow Creek. Following an armed attack at a police funeral, a local militia comprised of 7 troubled men whose only connection to one another is a shared hatred of the federal government convene at their remote headquarters to wait out the manhunt. Yeah, so they mentioned that. And right off the bat, I was like, well, damn, this list is legit. And this crimereads.com. Crimereads.
Oh, look, I even know. All right, I even like the movie that's the artwork for it.
Yeah, because what I was starting to say, a lot of times, like, if you see the AV Club, right? I used to read the AV Club religiously. And
too snooty.
It's too snooty. It's too woke. And also, I'm not their age demographic. I feel like I've grown out of the AV Club. They're 20 years younger than me. So, you know, it's like they're discovering how great Led Zeppelin is for the first time. You know, and like they're just like overly snarky and overly political and sometimes wrong and misguided. This is really, I mean, then there's other stuff, right? I'm not saying I don't like, if you've got a good perspective, I might not necessarily agree with what you're saying, but if you can back it up with good writing and, you know, then you make a point. I just read something, I think it was in The Atlantic, a review of the new Angelina Jolie movie that's on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And they basically said they're not, you know, they're not using Angelina Jolie in the correct way. And the critics are still saying that she's like too pretty, and they were bringing up how that's sort of not, but it was really well written and a well-rounded argument. And I was like, well, damn, they got a point here. Where the AV Club is just like, you know, bleh. They're just like,
I don't blame
gender, just, blah, blah, blah. They're like, just, they're so reactionary and annoying. So that's why I like this Crime Reads. It's so surprising to see. And like the stuff, they'll be like, you know, underrated movies of the 90s. And it'll be like, you know, some movie we've all heard of. You know, it's not even like, just because you just saw Reservoir Dogs doesn't make it new to your audience. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. I know I'm
no, bad. No, no. I get it. Very much, Lee, and I get very angry about a lot of these list things because I find that like...
Did you ever listen to Nirvana? It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Or, yeah, they're really good. All right, so, yeah, the first movie that they list as an underrated crime film of the decade is Standoff at Sparrow Creek, which came out. Under the Silver Lake, which is...
I started this.
I've never seen it, but I read it. It looks interesting, but no, you couldn't get into it.
I mean, it, you know what, it was just a weird time, and that's the other problem with movies nowadays. It's still on my, you know, watch next, you know what I mean? Like, but something else came out, and I forgot, you know what I mean? It's one of those, I worked with one of the actors in this. It was really cool what I saw so far.
And it's definitely, I mean, yeah, it's sort of the definition of underrated, because I remember reading about this, and it's got the guy who played Spider-Man, and then for whatever reason, this guy got crapped upon because he wasn't good enough as Spider-Man, even though Spider-Man and all those movies and all those Marvel stuff, it doesn't matter who, they're interchangeable. I think I could play Spider-Man. You know what I mean? Like, it's just computer graphics, right? Just, they'll shave off my love handles. Oh, and
I just watched that Wonder Woman, new one came back on HBO.
1984.
And that's the thing, like, it's all the stunts of them jumping up and down. Like, there's a whole opening scene. I mean, I can't talk about the ending because I fell asleep. But the opening scene of a little girl, at a certain point, it's just a cartoon.
It's just a cartoon, yeah.
But it's, like, so weird. Like, then just don't make it that epic.
I just discovered.
Like, her face distorts.
Right.
Yeah, like, it's just awful little. Like, it's, there's something, like, they're so close to perfection. But it's like, you know, when she goes full on somersault, like in the middle of that somersault, like her eye like goes all like Rob Bottin's thing, like it's so weird.
Yeah, there's
like the mask real quick.
There's the podcast called Come Town right now. Yeah, I had never heard of it. But they have like a great take on the Marvel movies and Wonder Woman in general, and they point out, as we have too, the way these Marvel movies just end with actors in front of a green screen going p-too, 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 and looking very but yeah, Come Town, which I guess is part of the Dirtbag Left, another thing I've just learned about, but I have no idea. Okay, then there's this movie called The Death of Dick Long, came out in 2019. I have never heard of it.
Never heard of that one.
It's the guy who made Swiss Army Man, which I think I watched.
Okay, all right.
Then, but I'm going to seek this out based on the fact that they have good movies listed in here. A Simple Favor.
That I don't know either.
Paul Feig. Yeah,
a
sleeper hit of 2018. Quite hasn't gotten its full due. Capital M movie star performances. Ooh, by Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. Blends together the proud perversity of Basic Instinct with the steely intelligence of Gone Girl.
All right, well, can I say this? I think I've seen this somewhere, and I might have passed on it just on the cast, but maybe...
If it's got Anna Kendrick, you're like,
Well, I also, Paul Feig right at, you know, I don't know. He's... I loved his work in Freaks and Geeks, but, you know, I don't know.
Got a little annoying. This is Low Life, 2018.
I think Larry's in this.
A hyper-violent Los Angeles set ensemble crime drama with a fractured narrative. Low Life certainly invites comparisons to Pulp Fiction, blah, blah, blah. Now, moving on, The Sisters Brothers, which is one I've been dying to see, and it's been on my radar, and I see that it's now available maybe on HBO. One of the streaming services has it, and I've just never watched it because it kind of got beat up in the reviews. But this is Jaquan Phoenix and John C. Reilly, the great John C. Reilly, one of our great character actors, right? I mean, he's up there, Robert Duvall, Reilly.
He's the Gene Hackman we have today.
He's just, yeah, I love that guy. And I'll pretty much try to watch him in anything. And like, just looking back over his career, the guy went from like, he was in State of Grace. He's great in those few scenes.
He's in like three Sean Penn movies, Dr. right? In the Steve beginning of his Brule. Career.
Like, oh, yeah. His range.
Those are on HBO Max.
Oh yeah, the Adult Swim.
Highly recommend that.
I've been definitely watching. Excuse me. So The Sisters Brothers, noir tinged western, an adaptation of a novel. By turns tender and brutal, disturbing and funny. The Sisters Brothers would have been right at home during the heyday of revisionist westerns, which was just the '70s. Like, so they compare it to sort of a Robert Altman type Western. So I definitely Hold the Dark, which I think was that the Netflix
we've talked
one
about. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We did a whole episode on it back in when Joe, it was me, you and Joe. Yep.
I don't think we loved it. We think it was just a little long for Netflix. His other movies were way tighter. And I think when you get a Netflix movie, you can be, you know, a little longer. And sometimes I don't know if that's as good.
And that was the Blue Rune and Green Room guy. Hold the Dark, I thought was
incredible cast.
But it's and it's cool that it's on there, and it was different. I mean, I you know, it's a movie I like.
Oh, it has epic scenes. There's a shootout that is an amazing shootout.
Yep. Then the great I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore from 2017, which we've talked about previously on this podcast. Me and you loved it. I don't remember if Joe liked it or not.
I don't remember, but also like Macon Blair is the writer of this, who works a lot with the previous director we just mentioned, previous movie. They did Blue Ruin together. I did a movie with Macon. Macon's doing the new Toxic Avenger.
Oh, no. Yeah, Macon Blair. You know, they even mention in here how his name pops up. He's like, he's the neo-noir guy. All right. So, yeah, and that was the great. And what's his name is so good in that.
Oh, Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood is so good. I don't feel at home in this world anymore. And then another movie. You and I are both like, yeah, this is a great little movie.
This is the only Adam Driver project I like.
Logan Lucky by what's his name? Steven Soderbergh. This pretty much bombed. You never hear about it, but yeah, this is a great little movie. Just I mean, and then that whole. What do they sing? West Virginia, coming on Country Roads, or whatever the heck it's country. Called.
Yeah. It's such also, you know movie. What's funny is, what's his name? Daniel Craig, the James Bond guy, right? Yeah. Daniel Craig.
That's his head. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone loves him in that 26 Knives or
out.
Whatever.
Yeah. Knives Out. Yeah.
So, like, he's brilliant and funny and really good in this movie. I don't know. You know, anyone could have played the part in that Knives one.
Oh, and here's the line I was talking about. Logan Lucky also features Macon Blair in a small but memorable role, making him the MVP of this list. Yeah, and what's his name? Who's the freaking Magic Mike guy?
Tatum O'Neal? No, not Tatum. Shannon Tatum?
Whatever his name. Yeah, that guy is really good in this. Then we get into stuff I have no idea. The Queen of Hollywood Boulevard from 2017.
I don't know that one either. I don't even recognize the people's names.
Yeah, Always Shine, another one. They say it's a great recent entry in the House of Psychotic Woman.
I worked sub-genre. With that director.
Is that Sophia Takal?
Yeah, I've worked with her in the past. She produced and acted in a couple things I did.
So I should note who writes this, because this guy's dog eat dog. Oh,
wow.
And you've mentioned that 100,000 times. And this is why it was on Paul Schrader's Facebook page.
All right, makes sense.
Dog eat dog got a little love.
This is Nick Cage that you have to see.
Right, like, yeah. This is, I guess it's too brutal and too reality-based. Yeah. And it's weird that, like, Mandy, I mean, I love Mandy. Mandy's a great flick. But Dog Eat Dog, I don't understand why it's not as popular as Mandy. I mean, well, I get also, it, because this is uglier, and it's not, you can't hide behind, I mean, the hyper-violence, and it feels real.
Nick Cage is the straight man, too, in this.
Yeah. The great Willem Dafoe, man. Willem Dafoe. And the writer says, when First Reformed was released last year, it was hailed as a long-awaited return to form. But while the intense spiritual drama was undoubtedly his best film in two decades, the talking point unfairly ignores Dog Eat Dog, his adaptation of Edward Bunker's 1996 novel about a trio of ex-cons looking to pull off a big-time kidnapping score. Yeah, I liked First Reformed, too, though. That's a good movie. Yeah. It's really weird, but I like First Reformed as well, with what's-his-name, Ethan Hawke. Abel Ferreira makes
the
list.
I started this movie.
Never heard it. It's called Welcome to New York, 2015.
Where he gets, like, almost, he rapes somebody or is alleged?
He's a foreign banking dude, like, well-protected, very powerful, who I believe, it's based on a true story. If I remember correctly, he's accused of, like, assaulting, like, a maid or something like that?
Yeah,
okay. I didn't even know this movie existed. And it stars Gerard Depardieu, who was later, he got Me Too'd as well for some sexual assault allegations. But it's Abel Ferreira, the crazy Abel. What I love about Abel Ferreira, I can't say I've really, like, ever been able to sit through an Abel Ferreira movie. Like, even King of New York, I found, was kind of like just so over the top and insane. But now there's all these stories. If you, like, Google Abel Ferreira on YouTube, actors who worked with them, who are just like, they're kind of like, oh yeah, he's great, but he was just like a psycho. He's just an insane psycho in every way.
It is worth a YouTube view. Go on Conan and type in Conan O'Brien and Abel Ferreira. It is an incredible appearance.
Oh, what is that? Is he like promoting Bad Lieutenant at that point?
I don't even know at what point, what movie. It might be in this other one with Asia Argento. I don't even know where it might be, The Funeral. He's so effed up, man. It is like crazy. Like, Conan can't even interview him. And it's like early Conan, too. You know what I mean? It's very early.
He was not self-assured.
Yeah. It is so worth it.
Welcome to New York. All right. And then scanning. The Gift. This one was kind of
movie.
Joel Edgerton with what's his name from whatever it was. Arrested Development. Justin Bateman.
Yeah.
And then here it is, the movie that Brian worked on, Cold in July, released in 2014, director Jim Mickle's adaptation of Joe R. Landell's country fried noir novel, adroitly puts the viewer in the mindset of its reluctant everyman protagonist by never letting them get their bearings. And it stars Michael C. Hall and freaking Sam Shepard, dude. Like, you work with Sam Shepard, one of the greatest American playwrights of the modern times, right?
Sam Shepard, I remember I was doing an ear wound on Michael C. Hall, and I played, I'm an old guy, but this really, like, makes me look older. Like, I brought, like, a CD player and CDs, you know, because I don't have an iPad, an iPhone. I don't have music on my phone, you know, and you can see what year this is. Like, so you figure a year before that it was made, and I brought CDs. So I had Neil Young's Decade. And Sam Shepard sat right next to me and just listened to Decade with me. And we're doing a makeup. And at one point he comes in, he goes, "Hey, don't rush the guy. Today's scene is all about me." He's like, "When I'm ready, everyone will be ready." And I was just like, Sam, I wish you could say that all the time, like, on set.
He was saying, "Don't rush you."
Yeah. Cause they were, you know, every time a PA would come in and say, "Oh, how much longer? How much longer? Are you almost ready?" And he was trying to say, like, you know, he just told the PA, "Today's scene is all about me. I wasn't doing a makeup on him. He was literally listening to the music. All right. I'll also say this, like, listen, man, I'm no dumbass. I don't bring Metallica to that set. You know, yeah. Put on, I mean, who's not going to, I mean, I think I had the band and Neil Young. I figured knowing who Sam Shepard is, like, you know, I was no dummy. I mean, maybe that was a little like smart thinking in my head, but, and they sat and just listened to Neil Young, man.
Well, you got to think, like, I've seen that movie, even, I mean, we're, this is audio only, but even there's a still, this, you know, it's Michael C. Hall with like a 70s era mustache looking sweaty, sitting in a car with a giant steering wheel, probably has bucket seats, staring at Sam Shepard, who's framed against like storm clouds behind him. And it's just like, yeah, that Neil Young fits here. Anything from the 70s fits here. Yeah, Sam Shepard, man, and that guy, that's pretty cool. That guy was definitely a legend. True West, you know, that insane. I saw in New York City for like free. It was True West with John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman in the lead roles.
Oh, yeah. See, that's amazing.
And Jim Mickle also directed Stakeland. And Brian, that's supposed to be, if you get it arranged, that's supposed to be your episode.
Yes.
Pint of Comics, their movie invitation. You guys are going to talk about that. But also, I mean, Cold in July also had Don Johnson. It's pretty cool how Don Johnson has had this third act of his career, a total resurgence. He's in all these. He'll play a small part, but he's always good. I mean, he was in The Watchmen.
He's been
like 100,000 different movies.
He was in all of those Zoller movies that you mentioned at the top of the show. You know,
that's right.
The Cell Block. You know?
Yeah. Brawl in Cell Block 99. So yeah, it was he. I mean, don't feel like you have to share, but it was Don Johnson
was Don, exactly what you would expect. He was like, you know, cocky but cool, friendly, but you know, I remember at one point he said, "Oh no, you don't have to put any blood on me. You don't have to put it," but he was supposed to be dead. And so I just waited until he went down. And at the last second, just kind of like out of the corner, you know, like not really looking at him, just poured the blood on him. And he's like, "Well, what are you doing?" Because the director wanted blood on him. And like, he was just being a little like, you don't pour blood on Don Johnson, you know?
Right. And you got to think Don Johnson, you know, Miami Vice, he was the prettiest man alive. You know what I mean? For 55 years, he was the prettiest.
He was
dude,
definitely like, you know, there was three incredible guys on that, like, more than that, there was a lot of people. It was a very macho set. It was really cool. You know, he was the one, you know, he was Don Johnson. I mean, he was very cool, though. I have to admit, like, he was funny. He had old stories. Talked about Dead Bang. Like, he was told, like, funny stories.
Dead Bang.
But, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I guess Cold in July is sort of a spiritual successor in some ways. You know,
well, I thought it was funny that he mentioned Dead Bang because I'm like, well, you're the only one mentioning Dead Bang.
Dead Bang.
Because he does a spit take. He's like, hey, man, I invented the spit take and John Frankenheimer's Dead Bang. I didn't want to get into that. You know, the spit take has probably been around since, you know, before our time.
I just like that he names a director. That's so awesome. He was probably joking though, right? Could that be his weird?
Like he had a very great, like, you know.
Of course he's joking. What am I saying? Yeah. He's got to be joking. All right, so Cheap Thrills, another one. This is a great
movie.
Yeah, this is a really good movie.
Pat Healy was in The Innkeepers.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to be in Scorsese's new movie.
Oh, wow. And there's also David Koechner, right? Isn't David Koechner?
Oh, yeah. Anchorman?
Yes. Yeah. He's really good. Ethan
Embry is also in that. And he was in Late Phases. I worked with him. He's a really nice guy.
And definitely. And Cheap Thrills is basically a series of, you know, it's a class warfare movie. It's like a dinner party that a rich guy holds, and he dares the struggling people, the people who are like making less money, to do a series of humiliating or violent things. It was a really good movie. Disturbing. Faults came out in 2014.
I don't know that one.
I don't know anything about it. Great character actor Leland Orser, who you recognize in the most harrowing scene of David Fincher's Seven. All right, so it must be the guy who has the hyperventilating thing. Elizabeth Winstead's in it. The Counselor from 2013. Ridley Scott. I don't remember this at all. From a script by Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Ridley Scott. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one.
And then, all right, Sun Don't Shine came out in 2013.
Okay. I worked on that.
You worked on Sun Don't Shine?
Yeah, man. I got flown down. I know the The director's Amy Simons. I'm probably massacring her last name. She was in Bitter Feast. She was in, I did another movie, Revenge for Jolly. She's also like, you know, in a Ridley Scott Alien movie. And that's Caitlin Scheel. I did a Joe Schwamberg movie with her. They flew me down and like, there might be a dead body in a trunk or a slit throat. I was there for like 24 hours. I went down to Tampa Bay or something like that. Flew in, did a throat slice and left.
And the summary is a pair of lovers drive through Southern Florida with a body in the trunk of their car. They're trying to get to the Everglades where they can dump the corpse in a swamp. So you probably had a hand in the corpse that they're talking about.
No, it was, I think, but I don't think you ever, you don't see it all.
Gotcha.
I have one shot in the movie. There was one scene.
And they say, then this is exactly what you're saying here. Call it Mumble Noir.
Yeah.
So that's, so what are you, there's two of these movies you were directly worked on. And I think this is the last one. Okay, something called Gone with the Pope. It's actually from 1976, some type of insane arty crime movie that was never completed, but somebody, this guy, editors by a name of Bob Borowski, put it together and put out a completed project in 2010. Upon first glance, Mitchell, who's the director, Duke Mitchell, wrote, directed, produced, and starred. Seems a kindred spirit to fellow outsider artists Ed Wood, Rudy Ray Moore, and Tommy Wiseau. Though Pope is far stranger, honestly more impressive. It's a more impressive beast than any of their So Bad They're Good productions. So, yeah, I guess that's not, it's really hard to get. It's not streaming anywhere.
Makes it hard to see. Back.
Yeah, Gone with, yeah, they saved that for last. A movie you can't find anywhere. Gone with the Pope. So I just thought that was a really cool list of crime movies, and I just, a bunch we hadn't seen but a bunch we have, and two Brian worked on.
Yeah. Excuse me.
So we can vouch for the credibility of who. Oh man, I want to name the author just to give the guy a goddamn shout out. I gotta scroll all the way back up here. Zach Vasquez.
Also, they're not the typical movies I'm actually very happy with those. Like he lives up, his list lives up to the title that it suggests. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It really.
Yeah. It makes me want to go. I want to go seek out the movies that I didn't see there. I'm actually looking at everything the guy wrote. He's got a whole essay on Cutter and Bone, that John Hurd, Jeff Bridges movie from the late 70s or early 80s. I can't even remember. He's got another one called The Meticulous Noir of David Fincher. I mean, you can't beat that. So this author is awesome. The Coen Brothers' Enduring Ties to Crime Literature. Man, this guy's the great Elmore Leonard Renaissance of the late 90s. Paul Schrader. I'm so glad the dude turned me on to this.
And he was right. Fourth episode of Paul Schrader was right, I should say. The fourth episode of whatever that Mayor of Easton wasn't as good as it, you know, as it's been.
Delco. The Media Film Festival.
Yes.
Our pal Lisa and I can't remember the other person's name at the moment. We had them on our podcast back in the day. Like I like how we were way ahead of the Delco thing. We had Delco on this podcast before it was cool.
I am watching that show, and I will say this: I don't know where. I mean, I know where she came from, but. She's popping up all over. She was in Watchmen. She's got a new show on right now. But
wait, the crazy old lady?
Jean Smart.
Oh, really? She's everywhere?
She is on that Mayor of Easton or whatever. I always want to just say the Mayor of Easton, you know, but she's phenomenal. Who knew the, you know, designing woman? You know what I mean? Like, I never even watched that show. That woman is like amazing lately.
Oh, I forgot she was in that. Yeah, there was that SNL sketch. Now, I didn't even know what it was referring to. It was referring to that show. I can't say the name either. But it was like, it's a latest, it's a female detective with a messy ponytail, with a weird, an English actress doing a dead-on accent. And it just made me think of like, yeah, that's every show on Netflix. Like, yes. Every single Netflix show are these dark, stupid, you know, I don't know. There's so much of that. But that's
speaking of SNL, I watched that. I don't know anything about SNL, but I watched that Michael Che. He had a TV show. It's only like 6 episodes.
Oh, really?
It's a sketch comedy show on HBO Max. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, I got to check that out. I didn't even know that existed. I saw he had something. I just assumed it was stand up, but he's got a sketch.
Yeah, show. No, it's it was like really, really, really funny.
You know, SNL, I was just listening this morning. There's the podcaster and stand up comic guy.
Hold on a second.
Why?
Yeah,
what's up?
Yeah.
What's going on? I'm recording a podcast.
Oh, never mind.
Why? What's up?
I was going to tell you, I get that door next weekend. I'm going to go up.
All right. I'm sorry.
It's got a door coming. So, like, there was the guy, Tim Dillon. He was, you know, he's I don't know if you're like Kevin Brennan talks about him all.
Oh, yeah, time. Yeah.
He was talking about the new SNL. And my point being, like, I think SNL is so, like, you know, Michael Che can't be Michael Che on SNL. You know, they're all sort of constrained by whatever, you know. I don't know what they're like. Is it political correctness? Is it whatever?
I don't know Michael Che at all, but I went back and watched a bunch of SNL. Like, and yes, I think that guy is hilarious. But I've never seen him. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's what you're saying. He's playing it so safe and
he's
tongue in cheek. You know, like
the writers on the show, the whole thing. Like SNL is such a. I mean, it's still. Hey, look, I'll watch the clips. You know, on YouTube the next day, but it's really become a. You know, I guess maybe corporatized. I don't even know what the right word is. But anyway, Tim Dillon, what I was bringing up was he, and I didn't even see this, but I guess there's the first Asian guy ever to be cast on SNL did a segment on Weekend Update about Stop Asian Hate. But it's painfully unfunny and just bizarre. Like, I guess that Colin Jost guy. I mean, you go listen to Tim Dillon. I'm sure you're listening to this podcast, you probably already have. I'm not doing it any justice, but it's interesting because, like, they start the bit, they introduce, you know, Colin Jost is the anchor, and he introduces the bit by just saying, here to talk about how it's wrong to hate Asian people is this guy.
Like, they don't, there's no like setup, like it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
It just seems like, okay, this guy's going to come out and just talk to you about how, you know, this is something we should raise awareness about.
So anyway, and the guy brings up some like bizarre points, but it's just like, to me, it's just like, oh yeah, SNL is totally this contained thing right now. And they got to be so careful about what they do because the world has changed. So well, then that was just, and then the guy, Tim Dillon's point was basically that the actor who did this or the comedian who did this is clearly not ready to be on SNL.
Yes.
And after listening to the guy, you're like, yeah, it's hard to deny. Like, Lorne Michaels is now pulling people on. And then from some of the shows I watch, you do get that feeling like there's a real amateur hour to some of the people on there. They almost seem like they're nervous to be on. And I don't ever remember that happening before. So anyway, that's a.
But I recommend his TV show, Michael Che. I think it's like, I don't even know. I'll massacre any title, but it's just something Michael Che. Because it's political, but doesn't really, you know, favor one, you know, it might favor one side, but it shows all, like, it's just funny. It's funny, and if you know, there are some political moments in it, and he's very funny.
That's cool. So what else, like, we talked about just now the crime movies, and you had said before we started beginning, did you want to go
over that? Was just the one thing I want. That was it. I watched that Mayor of Easton, but it was funny because I was going to bring up the only reason I was watching it was Paul Schrader was watching it, so it's kind of funny that all this sort of happened. And that's, you know, I mean, besides, and I never watched SNL. I kind of said all that. Yeah. And I watched Wonder Woman, where, like I said, I started to. But that's a damn long ass movie and nothing happens.
Of course it is. Yeah. And yeah, what's his name is tap dancing so hard. The guy from Narcos and Game of Thrones and The Mandalorian, whatever his name
is. Again, it's also just an issue. Why do they need so many supervillains? Yeah. I mean, I understand you don't love, like, I'm willing to watch it. I wasn't paying for it.
Did you see that they even got, what's her name from Midsommar, that great indie actress who's like the new Meryl Streep?
She's in that movie?
They've taken her for some, she's playing some other Marvel superhero that I've never heard of. But it was a huge thing. Like, they're just anybody. They're just taking, not anybody, but like, she's a huge.
I argue with
really about that actress. And of course, Marvel's like, oh, yeah, she's going to be the Green Hornet female.
I argue about this at work all the time. I hate that. But I mean, I get it. These actors, they want to go be able to go do a Midsommar. So right. She's got to do a Marvel movie so she can go do the movie. Like, it just sucks because, like, I wouldn't be as angry if those personal projects they take get just as much, like, lavish. You know, I just realized this, man. There's my movie, like, the movies I want to watch, that list that you just wrote, none of those would ever be in a theater. Right.
Yeah, and here we are, two guys who, I mean, you know, we're getting older. We're not watching movies the rate we used to, like in our 20s or whatever. We're not as obsessive. But, like, there's all movies we would seek out. You know, Cold in July. Like, not enough people know about these movies. You know,
well, listen,
the fact that we don't even know about some of them. But, yeah, but I can't get – everybody's doing an Avengers podcast. Let's go watch the Avengers and talk – let's talk about the Avengers.
Yeah, and – I mean, I'm actually happy, like, this list. I'm glad I didn't say what I was going to say originally, like when you were talking about, like, oh, AV Club or this, because people that pick these movie lists, horror movie lists, I'm always like, well, where the hell are the damn movies that I worked on, which I'm not saying everyone is great, but I have a handful of very good horror movies.
Yeah, if you're going to say underrated – right. If you're going to say underrated, it should be like, well, it should be a movie that not everyone's heard of. And that's where they always fail. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have a whole film or whatever, that stupid one where they kill babies. And like, I don't like any movie I worked on. If they just spent some on marketing, I'm not saying they're mainstream movies, but they follow that formula. You know, they follow, you know, they're not subversive or they're not like they're good. You know, they're just as good as any of those Blumhouse movies that make a list.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They might. So, you know, I feel like I'm glad I
didn't say that. I'm glad I just didn't say that rant before, because I almost interrupted you when you were talking about that to go on that rant, because then I actually had two movies on that list.
Yeah. Here, this dude. Yeah. Dude recognized some actually real underrated movies that don't get seen as much as they should. But yeah. Anyway, I mean.
Well, we'll have to talk about this next week. I am, you know, I believe I did some background makeups for Army of the Dead, and that's going to be the next Netflix movie that's out.
Yeah, that's everywhere. This is, I feel like Army of the Dead is the biggest thing they've ever promoted.
It might be their biggest movie at the time, too. I don't know any of that. Hopefully that'll come out in an article. I'm not saying that, you know.
I feel like the advanced press on Army of the Dead is equal to like what you would traditionally see at the beginning of a summer movie blockbuster. Like, it's just, I mean, you know, is there going to be like Army of the Dead Happy Meals? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's getting that big of a push. And to me, and I could be wrong, I'm just going on my gut and what I see in front of me. It seems like this is Netflix. It's like, okay, this is we are now a major studio. And they are a major studio, but like, this is our tentpole summer movie. Here it is, Army of the Dead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's their answer to. All right.
Not you like they've come a long way since like that Cloverfield, whatever, John Goodman stuff. So see the freaking Nomcast. You want to get some. I'm still trying to figure out how all these guys get people from Netflix to be on. Like, how do I? I guess we would never do it. We're too.
I don't know.
I don't really.
I'd be afraid that we wouldn't like the movie.
No, and then we talk about the guy. Hey, this sucked, man. They don't. Yeah.
I will say this: working on the movie was a hell of a good time. It was a very good time. Many talented people.
Where was that? Where did they film that? Like, where?
I shot my sequence, just inserts and background people. We shot it in. I think they filmed most of it in New Mexico, but then they came to Atlantic City. And we shot in like in a closed down casino.
It's so depressing, but awesome. You know what I mean? Like the fact that, it's Atlantic City. They could just film a giant movie there because the casinos are dead.
That was basically, especially the one we were in was a closed down casino. But, you know, still have like enough.
Now I remember this. This is when you stayed in the.
I stayed in a casino, but it was like,
Where they, and there was the New Jersey. Horror Fest
was there. One of them. One of those. Like it was one of those. Yeah.
It's the New Jersey Horror Fest and Film Festival.
First one when it was in Persephone.
Yeah, and it was like a really small motel, but now they've gone down to the casinos.
A closed casino. You know what I mean? So it was even that convention was pretty. Like it seemed more full at Persephone.
Self-contained. Yeah, I mean, like, in a horror convention at a.
casino or a closed casino. I guess it's just, you can still get a room there. That just seems like the perfect horror convention. But that hotel was a little, had some issues, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Bedbugs. Yeah. Who needs that?
No. And it was right next to the Hard Rock, so I gambled.
Oh man, see, I'm starting to think now that the COVID's been declared over. I mean, unless you're under 12, and you know, like my son has asthma, I guess COVID's over for everybody else. Let me see something here. Let's look up CT Horror Fest, and then we'll end it. Let's see what's going on.
Bill Johnson, I think.
We got to talk about, like, are we going to do vendors again for this? They got Matthew Lillard, which is that's a giant get.
Yeah, Shaggy.
They got CG Graham, Chris Durand, who played Michael Myers in one of the things, Bob Elmore. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Bob Elmore. Yeah.
Bob Elmore from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Which is, both of us believe that Texas Chainsaw 2 is a better movie than 1. I already put it in the email. I put in an email to the promoter of the show. I was like, hey, if the dude from Texas 2 is doing any interviews, can we please get him on this podcast?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
It's always tough, though, because like they'll go with the so-called bigger media. But like, that's a whole other Congress. Well, they have a Patreon page. I didn't even realize that. CT Horrorfest has a Patreon page if you want early guests. It's at the Naugatuck Event Center. I guess
same place, yeah.
Yeah, September 18th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., the Naugatuck Event Center, 6 Rubber Avenue in Naugatuck. But, all right, so that's that. Sorry to drag that on for a little bit longer than probably it deserves.
Well, it's all for Pint of Comics, Johnny Amenta. He wanted a longer episode.
A certain length. Yeah. So you know what we got to do? I'll talk about this offline. Go ahead. Right. What
were you going to say? I was just going to try to get you to plug. I was going to say, you know what one of his favorite movies is?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Now I got to go through this again.
Treasure to me. I love Judge Dredd. God. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
My favorite thing about that soundbite is somebody in the background is like, whoa!
Treasure to me. I love Judge Dredd. God. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
All right.
Moving.
Move. Moving.
There we go. All right. So for Brian Spears, this is Carlos Danger for the Mobile Horror Companion.
Get her.
And we'll see you next time.
Later.